The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday. And this is Westchester on the Level. We have some great guests today. We're going to have Brandon Snyder. He's going to be on the show with us. He'll be talking about his campaign effort. He's running for the 4th District. And that'll probably be the first hour or so. We'll see how far we go. A lot of things happening in the party as far as the Democrats are concerned. They're slugging it out definitely very heavily with regard to the city council president's race. So we'll see where that's moving ahead. We will not go longer engage in the process. So he's pulled away. And the only people left now are Ivy Reeves, and Mike Rotinelli. So we know that there'll be three people at the moment that are scheduled to become involved in the campaign effort for city council president. So there's what we go with over there. I somehow see that we haven't heard from Brandon. So let me just see if I can give him a call on the side. We are speaking to you from a remote location, and just as we were hoping to begin the process here, we lost the signal, but we were able to retrieve it right away. Okay, so let me see if I can get him at his number and just make sure that he's aware that we're on, and maybe he had trouble or we lost him when we lost the signal just at about 10 o'clock. So we'll be ringing him. Hello. Hi, Brandon. It's me, Hezzy. Are you going to be calling the show? Do you have the number? Oh, I'll give it to you if you want. It's 347-205-9201. So we'll just wait for you to call. Right. Thanks. Okay. Giving us a call. We'll see what's going on there and see how his campaign is going on. And then afterwards, if we have an opportunity, we'll also be able to give you the phone number. So if you want to call us up and you want to
All right.
Okay, Brandon, do you hear us?
Yes, I do. How are you doing, Eddie?
Okay. For some crazy reason, we lost the signal, and I guess that sometimes could happen because I'm functioning out of City Hall outdoors, so these remote locations can be difficult. So how are you?
Doing very well. How are you doing, Hezzy?
Okay. Well, I'm glad you called. This is really great. But maybe you could tell us where are you in the campaign process? You're running to represent the 4th district in Yonkers in the Yonkers City Council in the future. So, how's that process going for you?
Right now, we're in the signature process. As we're a non-party campaign, we started about a month after the parties. And our goal is to hit 526 signatures. But obviously, like any other signature gathering process, you gather much more. Not because of legitimacy reasons, but most likely you're going to have a few dozen signatures knocked out from challengers.
So you're creating this new party line, and what is it going to go for 560 signatures in order to place a new party line on the ballot?
I got about half of that, but from what I understand is that you said 526 signatures to put a party on the ballot line.
Okay. And then, so who can sign a petition like that?
Anybody registered to vote within the 4th District.
Anybody that what?
Anybody registered to vote in the 4th District.
Oh, okay. So that's not as easy as it sounds, actually, because, I know there are, what, about 35,000 people in each district? So
We're about that point.
Okay. And then what's your deadline? Like, when do you have to have all those signatures in to be validated?
Our deadline is August 19th, and August 20th is filing.
Okay. That's not bad. So there's a little bit of time to get this.
Yes.
And do you have a lot of volunteers helping you, or are you the one that has to go door to door and witness all these signatures as they take place?
I'm one of the petition gatherers. I figure that I should be out there doing it myself when I'm not at another event. But we do have a few other volunteers, but we're always looking for more.
Yeah. And how do you find people welcome or not welcome the concept of another? What is their reason for considering ascribing their name to a petition for a new party line?
Well, most people, it's funny because when somebody goes up to the door, normally after you say the intro of what they're doing, why they're at the door, the first question I'd say about 90% of people ask is, what party? Obviously, if you don't say the party that they're registered, they're going to tell you to go away. But every time non-party is mentioned, they always seem willing to sign that. They're all right with that. They'd rather have somebody who only wants to represent the local area than a specific party.
That's nice. That's very interesting. So it's quite telling, I guess. People can draw inferences of their own as why people would want to ascribe their name to a new party, to create a new party. So there must be something about the Democratic and Republican parties and the independents and the conservative party lines that you think that they don't feel satisfied about.
About half of that got broken up.
What are you looking for in a new party?
I'm pretty sure the city of Yonkers would be happy if there was a whole new party that would take over and start fixing things, stuff that should have been fixed 2 decades ago. And we have that willingness showing. But of course, I mean, that's a citywide effort to make it. I mean, every ballot election, we could have this existence. I mean, we could have this standing so that every city election, there's somebody under this line. And that'd be a very interesting feature because no other city in Westchester would actually have a group of people who are willing to step outside the typical parties to do things properly.
What are you talking about decades ago? Like, what were you thinking about? I guess the things that are responsive to the consumer, to the resident.
Could you say that one more time?
So what is it that the voter is concerned about that needs to be fixed? Is it potholes? Is it streetlights? Is it quality of life issues?
That's all the issues that need to be fixed. But in order to fix that, we actually need to fix the fact that we don't have representatives actually within City Hall.
Well, that makes a lot of sense because a lot of the
the wants and the desires and the needs of the community are not expressed at City Hall, at the City Council, is very little that I hear is responsive to what the public requires. And there's no open discussion of it either.
No, that's what really bothers me, is that there isn't enough open discussion on certain issues.
Well, I wonder if people realize that the City Council meets every other week. And
no, that's not very well advertised.
No, and but the off weeks, when they're not there, they sit in committees and discuss issues which are never vetted for the public. The public is really aware of what being on is. Do you think you could bring that to the forefront as a City Council member?
I definitely could. I mean, anything could be brought. One thing I really am trying to push this campaign is the fact that I'm trying to be one of the most open council members when it comes to contact and just having complete transparency.
And do you think that people really want that, or do they just say that? Is that just a way to bitch about the present circumstance, or is that a legitimate way of moving ahead?
Well, from what I see, we have people who, you know, they want to vote, you know, they, as long as it's somebody that they know in office, then they're fine. But we do have a dedicated group of people who want a council member who they know what they're doing every day or every week. They want to know what their current status is, what they're working on, and that's what we're trying to put out there. So we cover those people who want to know what's going on every second. We cover the people who just want to know, you know, averagely what's going on. They want to know the council member. And then, of course, we have to cover the people who really aren't active at all. Because even though they're not active, they still have needs.
You said even those that are active, they what?
Even the people not active in Yonkers politics or community activism still have needs as well that have to be tended to.
Is there something wrong with the mechanics of the way we do things? Have we somehow atrophied into the 50s? Have we been able to evolve to today?
Could you say that last sentence again? It broke up.
What do you think is missing in the way we conduct politics in Yonkers? We're not as modern. Certainly, we don't use the latest technology to reach out to the voter and to the consumer. So what is it that we're doing wrong?
On a city basis, what really needs to be fixed is that it seems like, for looking at all the campaigns within the past decade, every campaign really hasn't changed in strategy or what they do it. Either there's a lot of money involved, so they buy their way into office, or they buy their way onto ballot status by hiring a million petitioners. Or what they'll do is they'll just, you know, they'll get their signatures and then they'll put banners everywhere, ads out, and then hope everybody sees them and votes for them in November. There's no real contact. I mean, it's for some reason I understand that, you know, it's a what most people consider a low position office for city council or any other judge or mayor in the city. It's like something like countywide that needs TV commercials and et cetera. But for some reason, yeah, we're still stuck in the 19th century. Well, 20th century, sorry. Right now with our campaign, we have about 99.99% of all the logistics online, all managed from one website.
Hmm.
I mean, we have everybody's information across the 4th District. We have, well, voter file-wise, we have, we can assign turf, we can assign certain areas to different people. So if somebody wants to help with the campaign, we can assign them to an area, they can monitor that area, go to supporters, mark supporters, and that way we can do follow-ups all over online. There's not much need for meetings. We can do all our meetings online. That way we don't have to group up all the time.
That's the conditions that are required. And how will that translate to better government at the end of the day? How do you see that changing? And what's the final purpose of it all? Is it just to save time so that there's a lot of extra time maybe to go out and boogie or hit the dance floor? I don't know. Or is it to help out the constituents somehow?
Well, one of the side projects of doing all this for the campaign was to show how much can we consolidate City of Yonkers work online. One of the things that bothers me right now is that there are people who can't make it to city council meetings but want their voice heard during the meeting. We can easily set up a live stream, which we already have, and connect it to some form of chat feed so that city council members can view that chat feed while during the city council meeting.
Right.
And then also, I mean, if we were able to consolidate all this during a campaign, why can't we start consolidating other features online, which some have, but they're so unknown that most people don't even realize that they can pay their taxes and their water bill online now.
They're doing some construction here at City Hall. They're doing the windows.
Yeah.
All day. Well, you know, we talk about this technology. Is it very expensive to incorporate, or is it really hardly anything? It's just the software. We already have the software, I believe.
We already have most of the software, and a lot of it's pretty easy. I mean, you can also use third-party companies such as PayPal or et cetera to get the bills done. It's making it more accessible. I mean, it really doesn't cost the city much than pennies and dimes, literally. Has he?
Okay, Brandon, sorry. We lost the connection here because they did something here and they shut us off somehow. But I have backup. So I'm sorry about that.
No problem.
So I wanted to ask you about the cost. Is this a very expensive thing to do, to install the chat during, let's say, the committee meetings or even the city council meetings? Or is this...
No, it literally be dollars. So to even a regular consumer...
Yeah.
It'd be dollars a year.
Wow.
It's something that we wouldn't even see on the budget.
That's amazing. And can we also, besides doing chat, can we also incorporate, let's say, like they've got on Skype, you can talk to people and you could see them while you're talking? Is that possible as well?
They could implement all that for dollars.
So it's just a question of will. Do you want to reach out to the constituents you claim to represent, or do you want to keep them out of the equation?
I mean, at one point you see that they want to help, but at the same time they only want to go so far.
Yeah. And do you think that more people would be listening in if they were aware that this would be a potential... outreach ability that they would have?
Well, I mean, the numbers could only go up. You wouldn't lose people for having these features. You could only gain.
Right. Well, one thing is for sure, if you go to the Yonkers City Council in the summer, there's no air conditioning.
Seats, so you don't want to be in... You feel uncomfortable. You feel not wanted.
Yeah. and it's very hard to sit there for 2 or 3 hours, sometimes yep. longer, hard benches, no cushioning, no nothing. It's really pathetic. And, well...
Totally agree.
Wow. So, do you find that people are energized with the creation of a new party for you? Do they welcome you because you're a younger person than the norm? I guess most of the people running for office in Yonkers must be in their 50s, which is getting a little
pretty much
old.
a lot of people, when it comes to me going door to door, first of all, they're surprised the candidate's actually going door to door for some reason. But yeah, they're surprised by the age, but they're always enthusiastic about it because they're used to either somebody being older than them or somebody that's near their age.
So you don't find any problem in being a young man. It's not like say, oh well, you're just a young kid, you don't know nothing, or you don't get that sort of attitude, do you?
No, I haven't got that attitude once, actually.
Oh, that's great. Boy, maybe we're more sophisticated in Yonkers than I thought.
I mean, we even have constituents who we go to their door and we find out they're not registered to vote, and we can register them to vote right there.
Wow.
A lot of people don't take advantage of that feature, but you can register to vote online now.
Oh, I like that. That's very. I've heard about it, but I'm already registered, so I didn't go through the process again. Well, they say, you know, in Yonkers, you have to vote and vote often, but you know, I'm afraid of trying to do that. It might put me in jail for that.
even the Yonkers public school education system, they do paper applications when all you have to do is move a computer to the cafeteria and everybody can sign up to vote right there.
Oh, wow. I wonder why we don't do that, and we work that out in the libraries, you know, just as a promotion for a week or two to make life a little bit easier for those people who aren't registered, make it convenient.
I completely agree.
A nice thing to do. That might be nice. So what are the challenges before you right now? What do you see that you have to proceed in the next month or so? In preparation for the deadline for the new party?
Well, besides the signatures, what we have to do is start forming a real campaign team, meaning actually assigning positions, actually putting all the logistics together. Because right now it's kind of a calendar full of events, an online database where we all contact each other, manage the voter database. But we really don't have any positions sought out. And as much as people think titles don't matter, sometimes titles do matter.
Well, I guess it's always nice to know that you're the right-hand man and there's a label to it, and more than just an honorable position, you know, which is, I guess, a nice thing. I think people strive for that. And so what are you looking for? Are there going to be openings in this new party? Any particular tenets to the party or a mission statement that people should be aware about?
Well, the main mission statement is that we're not reflecting direct values. We're reflecting values of the entire community. Within the 4th District, I mean, we're not just listening to one party, no matter how much they attempt to bribe or push their way, or no matter how active they are compared to other parties. It's all about listening to everybody and trying to break a middle deal.
And what are the issues concerning the 4th District? What is it that needs to be implemented in order to make the district thrive?
In order to fix this district, first of all, it's bringing both sides of the 4th District back together. It's bringing McLean Avenue back to life. It's further working with Empire City to better the 4th District as they're currently doing. Working with Cross County to fix the constant traffic issues that get impeded on the 4th District.
People always know what the issues are, but are there any solutions that we haven't undertaken? What's holding us back from fixing these things? Certainly with traffic situations, things could be mitigated, couldn't they?
The funny part is it's been going on for well over a year now. The traffic issues of the responses between the city and the community. And we get told that another traffic engineer is coming, but it seems that every second precinct meeting or any other meeting, it seems that we're still dealing with the same issue, with the same responses from the community that shows up every meeting.
And what is the response? Like, what are we getting at? What are we hearing from there?
So from what we hear from the city is that they're sending the same engineer who originally set the plan of the current traffic pattern, and then he'll see if he can do any changes, and then the community comes back saying it's still the same. And I understand
But what are the problems of the old way that the traffic pattern works? And so why can't this original traffic expert, why can't he make changes so that it actually meets the demands of the community? Is there a problem?
Well, the current issue is during busy hours of traffic from Vandenberg Avenue on to Central, there's houses that will physically get blocked for over an hour, and they can't leave their driveway because, one, it's New York drivers, so for some reason people don't realize they see white lights in the back of a car pulling out a driveway, why not make a little room so they can pull out? It's just a constant impedance on the local houses there. So basically what happened is they turned the local street into a business street where you can't get anything done on the street. It doesn't even feel like you live in a community anymore. It just feels like you live directly on top of Central Avenue.
And so why can't that be managed by redirecting traffic around these areas? What's the problem with that?
I'm assuming it's coming down to actually paying full blown a traffic engineer to redo everything, because so far this issue has gone over well over a year now. It seems that for some reason nothing's getting done, and we're not hearing anything about it.
Well, why aren't we hearing anything about it? I mean, why isn't the community raising their voice a little bit more loudly than just talking one-to-one with someone who hasn't respected their demands for over a year and a half? I mean, how long does it take? This is what usually drives me crazy, you know? Like, I don't understand it. Like, if I talk to you and you're obtuse, then I'm not talking to you anymore. I mean, I don't need to hear no from you a million times over. I need to have reason why you can't do what I'm asking you to do. And if you're legitimately right, then I have to accede to that. And then you're right and I'm wrong. Not because I want something different and it's wrong. It's because it can't be done. So what's the answer?
I completely agree with you. One of the main issues is that when you don't have certain people at these meetings that are representatives, then everybody in the public knows about the issue, but it seems to never actually get seen face to face to our actual representatives. Send the secretary.
You mean Mr. Shepherd, who's from the district, he doesn't come to these meetings?
No.
What do you mean, no? He doesn't come to these meetings?
No,
and the community has nothing to say about this?
Oh, the community has plenty to say about it.
Well, I don't hear them. They're not loud enough.
They're very quiet. but going door to door, as we've been going for the past couple of weeks, we constantly hear, yeah, as long as you're here, not him.
Oh, we'll see if that translates to votes, because that's what it's all about. Do you think people are more engaged in possible voting this time around than they have before? Are there issues that are burning in their hearts and in their minds? Yeah, we got to go out there and vote.
Would I like to see a higher voter turnout? Yes.
But
will we honestly see more than the typical about 3,500 votes the district sees every 4 years? Honestly, we are.
That's it? 3,400?
In the 4th district, you'll be lucky to see about 3,500 votes.
This is not good. Maybe we should be handing out Frankfurters and where you bring your own sauerkraut if you come and vote.
We do plan on setting a few booths around at other events to register to vote. I won't even be present at the table, so that way it's non-biased, whatever they want to register to vote, just so that we can pick up the activity. Or just remind people, hey, you know, there's an election coming up this November. You know, it kind of matters because he's your representative. But, I mean, right now our database which is active, which is reflecting last year's voter registered database, says that there's around 41,000 registered voters in the district, which is physically impossible because that's our population.
Right.
But that what it's reflecting, though, is that there's over 10,000 registered voters somewhere about that don't even live within the 4th District anymore.
You're kidding. Where are they? They must be living
in
elsewhere.
They move elsewhere.
They
move?
Where?
They move, but they never change. Because you can move, and you never change your actual registered address for voting.
So that means you can't vote in another area, and you're not voting in this area, but or maybe they're coming into the area even though they don't live here anymore.
Well, they can't vote in their area until they move their address over, but they still can vote in the city of Yonkers.
Oh, my God. So we may have like a fifth column of voters that we have no control, and they don't even know anything about the issues.
Yes.
Oh,
but they don't vote. I mean,
part
of the information that I get is what elections did they vote through, and the power of the tools that I have is that I can sort through them, sort through the people who don't even live in the district anymore but are still registered, and none of them ever vote in general Yonkers elections. So there's people over time who moved away from Yonkers and never voted in the first place.
Well, you know, we know that your Brandon, is it, do you pronounce it Nayreed or how
Nider.
Do you pronounce your last name?
Nider.
Nyrod. Nyrod. Well, because I'm always so confused with it. I mix up too many of the languages I speak. I always get it wrong.
It's
but
no
anyway,
problem. I don't take personal offense.
Well, so we're speaking to Brandon, and he's running in the 4th District to represent the 4th District in the November elections. So, so this is also Westchester on the Level, and if you want to get engaged, you can call up just like Brandon did. Give a call at 347-205-9201. And before we return to Brandon Nyrod, we're going to speak to what's happening at the Westchester Broadway Theater. So listen in. This is all for your Saturday enjoyment.
The summer excitement is back at the Westchester Broadway Theater with our sizzling Saturday Night Special Series all through August. Beginning on Saturday, August 10th with the incredible Frankie Valli tribute, Let's Hang On. All the greatest hits of the four seasons like Sherry, Walk Like a Man, Big Girls Don't Cry, and so many more. Then on Saturday, August 17th, international singing and recording star Michael Amante returns with his amazing repertoire of romantic, classical, and Broadway hits. Then there's another great oldies and doo-wop night on the 24th with a double bill performance by the Teenagers and the Capris. And we'll finish the series with an hilarious adults-only Battle of the Sexes comedy night on Saturday, August 31st. And don't forget, before each of these great shows, you'll enjoy a delicious served dinner with a choice of six entrees. Order tickets online at BroadwayTheater.com or call 914-592-2222. That's 914-592-2222. Come enjoy the summer weekends you've been waiting for with our Saturday Night Special Series all through August and only at the Westchester Broadway Theater.
Well, we are back, and this is Westchester on Level, but I guess for those people who live in the 4th District, unless you sign all the petitions for the people that you want to move ahead in the process, you're not permitted to go to the Westchester Broadway Theater until later. Lines are all over. So that's an important thing. So it might actually speed some people to do the right thing now.
Because this is all happening in August. So are you encouraged by the process, by meeting the people out there, the potential people that you could represent as constituents?
Yes, I'm always enthusiastic about it. It's funny, going through each neighborhood, you kind of, even though they're not too far apart by blocks, when you actually enter what's named a different neighborhood, there's always a different experience.
Cool. That's really cool. What about business concerns? Are there concerns that the business communities have where they require input from the community, from government? What does the Cross County Shopping Center require of us or Empire City? What do they require of us? What about the small bars and restaurants and supermarkets? What do they require of us as a city? And are we delivering?
Well, McLean Avenue noise going. So.
What do they need?
What the small businesses need are traffic. I mean, on McLean Avenue on the other small business streets, without traffic, these are small businesses that aren't backed up by millions of dollars. They need traffic every day to survive. And one of the main issues that I see right now is that the vacancy spots on McLean Avenue seem to be popping up every once in a while by businesses failing to meet or failing to actually get the traffic that they need. So what the city of Yonkers and the public need to do is choose locations for additional parking space for McLean Avenue. Right now, one of the major concerns I get from the public around the streets of McLean Avenue is that right now they're having huge parking issues on their own streets that they live on because people are parking on their local streets and then walking onto McLean Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
So it's proving that there is the want to go to McLean Avenue, but there isn't the requirement of the parking to actually visit. Now, when we move up north towards Empire City,
Before you go there, on McLean Avenue, are there any lots that might be available that could be built as multi-story parking spaces?
There actually isn't an available lot. And even if there was, I'm pretty sure the community wouldn't want that.
Uh-huh. So where do we go with it? So is it an unsolvable issue?
It's something that it's you have to wait for that opportunity to jump on it, and you have to jump on it fast because otherwise something else might come in its place.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right, forgive me. So then you were talking further and
yes.
Yonkers Avenue?
If we go up north towards Yonkers Avenue, which is on the border of the 4th District, really, in most cases, then we have Empire City and the Yonkers Avenue business strip. And right now it's the same situation where there is municipal parking also located next to Yonkers Avenue, not very used often. If anything, most of the cases is actually used by some of the business owners. And then you actually have people who are parking in other businesses' parking lots to go to other stores. So it seems that it's becoming a huge issue with the need, the want to go to these stores is there, but there's a lack of parking. Now, from what I see, Empire City has this large, amazing lot, only about 50% of capacity most of the time, if they're lucky, sometimes even less. And I don't know what their status is on actually parking in their lot and then going out to Yonkers Avenue. But
yeah, that's an interesting situation because they might open it up as long as they can until they need the space for something else. I'm getting the impression by listening to you, therefore, that the lack of parking.
Sorry about that, Brandon. Evidently, we got cut off again.
No problem.
So I wanted to ask you, what you're saying, is that expressive of the fact that we somehow don't have a good plan for the city with regard to parking? Is that one of the big issues that will sustain the quality of life for those that live in their private, basically private areas, and that we can't seem to support our businesses with enough traffic?
What seems to be the issue is that the city isn't keeping up the base level that we realize that we're becoming not just a suburban town anymore, but a full-blown city.
Uh-huh.
Yes, we have suburban still. But at the same time, we seem to be a very hybrid type of city where you might go to a section and see suburban, but the next block might be a full-blown city. So the issue right now is the 4th District is still the quiet side of Yonkers, but we still have the traffic requirements of a regular city for our businesses, especially when taxes just keep going up for these businesses. So they need this additional traffic from all over to actually succeed as a business.
That's a very interesting, prognosis of that this is a major, major issue, and yet I've not really heard it discussed, even though I've also felt that this was a major concern for the city's ability to survive and to thrive. So maybe with your input, that might actually make a big impression on the government. We'll see where they stand. Sounds like a very, very sensitive issue for a lot of communities.
Yes, it is. I mean, one of the main things people don't realize is that population density will just start increasing over time and spreading. And we live on the border of what's called New York City. And New York City is a very heavily populated density area. And all that's going to happen over time is eventually that population will cap and will start spreading up Westchester County.
Mm-hmm.
So what we will see over time is Westchester County will increase in population immensely. It's going to explode over the next 10 to 20 years because people need additional living space, and they're going to start moving into Westchester County to get into the city, which is basically what Westchester County point is right now, is that a lot of people choose us as a base to drive into the city and come back home.
Absolutely. What do you think about this whole situation with regard to Empire City? I think that the Beeline buses, they've started to serve the Woodlawn train station all the way to Empire City and back. It took them a long time to figure that one out. But I think that they've got a regular shuttle service now that actually, supports the old bus 20 and the bus 21 routes that always travel those routes. Are we ready for like a regular bus service, let's say even along McLean Avenue or Yonkers Avenue, to bring new clients to the district?
Yes, I'll touch base on both those comments. We could always use additional busing, especially because we have community activists who always want more public transit, or especially with a heavily trafficked area and issues of parking, public transit can actually help some of these effects of bad parking issues. But what the express buses are actually doing is a couple of things that are really great. One, we had major issues that are brought up in almost every meeting, but now it's finally mostly dealt with, is that the 20 bus was way too populated. The waiting lines were way too long to get on the bus.
Yeah.
When you got on the bus, it was really, really crowded. So people are complaining that, I'm trying to take the bus to work, but the more than 99% of the bus is going to Empire City.
Correct.
So it was really killing that bus. Nobody could actually get anywhere properly up Central Avenue. So it was hurting everybody, not only the 4th District.
Right.
So finally, what these express buses do two things. One, they get everybody onto that bus, so now they just take that bus to Empire City, and there's less traffic on the 20. But at the same time, we maintain that income for the MTA, so that way the MTA can keep their income, and they won't complain to us that they aren't making enough money, and that we get another fare spike.
I hear you. Where is the impact of the Liberty Line contract or franchise, is that going to affect the ability for Yonkers to grow? Is there a potential that there might be a cessation of service because the federal government is not happy with the way the county conducted its business on this issue? Are you familiar with that?
What I'm not I understand the contract and everything else, but I know the federal government involved. But what I, from my point of perspective, is the bus fare spikes, the increase of costs, just in general. Forget the fares itself. The increase in costs, well, it just hurt everybody in general, because any increase in cost will eventually increase fares. And since we've been living on a minimum wage that should have changed over a decade ago, what's funny is I keep saying a decade ago, because that's when it seemed that the government actually stopped working, was a decade ago, is that we can't meet the living cost of taking the bus, paying our rent, paying our bills anymore. The minimum wage is finally going up in New York State. Maybe the federal government will get it in their head that they need to raise it themselves. But even then, this minimum wage still doesn't actually meet inflation that was done on multiple surveys across the United States that actually should be much higher. But even then, I wouldn't be surprised if this coming school season in the city of Yonkers that we hear the MTA, they're going to raise their bus fare again just in time for high school students to start using them again, which is also an issue because we have students who can barely afford the current bus passes that the school system offers.
Really? I didn't recognize that too as a hardship. You know,
yes,
can you expand a little bit more about that?
Well, certain schools like Lincoln High School, I believe another couple of high schools use the public busing system as well, where basically the MTA does have direct buses to these schools during school starting and school ending. But these buses are regular MTA buses where you pay fare. So now normally the school system cuts a deal where you get a special school card from the MTA. Well, you get it from the school that works with the MTA, and you get about 4 trips a day, which is generous from the MTA. You get a trip there and a trip back home, and then I guess you get a transfer, and then you also have a spare 2 trips to go somewhere else. Maybe it's work or something else. So it's not a bad deal. But these are only available on weekdays. You can use them. But these cards can cost anywhere, depending on how much the school system gets screwed over, between $50 to $80, $90 a month.
Oh, you're kidding. Wow, I had no idea it was that expensive.
So as you can see, the students don't have this money. They have to go to their parents for the money. And sometimes the parents don't have that spare money. And then what we see is a drop in attendance because there's certain days they now can't go. Or there's a complete restriction now that the student has to walk 5-6 miles just to get to school because all the other schools didn't take them in. The school system threw them into the furthest school available.
Brandon, we should tell people we're speaking with Brandon Nider, and he's running in the 4th District to represent the community. How do people get in touch with you should they care to be engaged in your setting up this new party line and engaged in your effort to represent the community? How do people reach out to you if they want to become involved?
All right, so the number way, and thanks to the new website that we put up, the whole shebang, you can actually go directly to our website now, BrandonNider.com, BrandonNider.com. And all you have to do is click the volunteer page, and you can actually select what you want to do, what you want to help with, whether it's just regular I support you, or you want to do phone calling or voter list or logistics or even petitioning. You can select, you can check any box and you can click it right there, and our campaign team will get an email right then and there, and we'll follow up with a phone call.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, so
go ahead.
Yeah. We want to make everything easy.
Well, easy is good. Easy is better than hard, I guess. Unless you like it hard, you know, that's fine too. So anyway, the bottom line is, how in your studies of politics, what's different today than what was thought to be, I guess, the most prudent manner in reaching out to the public and gaining their confidence and potentially their vote? How are things different today? Are there two different types of people today? Or do you have an older crowd or just like not with it, totally disconnected from reality and the new technology? And then a new generation of like under 35s, maybe even under 30s, who really live and breathe the new technology, and that's what gets them to be so passionate.
We are. It's about the age of 35 and under that are technology based.
Oh my God. I'm getting further and further away from me.
But yeah, I mean, with the older population, we still maintain the regular mail contact, phone contact, flyers and everything else. We still have all that. But what we're trying to push is it saves so much in campaign costs alone, just doing most of this by saving that age bracket between 35 and under by doing it all over the internet.
Yeah.
And then we still have the regular old contact information and everything else, so people can still contact us with any concerns.
Mm. Amazing. And are people who support you, are they able to promote through their network support of your effort? I mean, do you go to Facebook and send it to 200 of your best and close friends?
Yeah, so what actually happens is when you click that you're volunteering or that you support us, you can actually spread to your Facebook friends, all from our website or Twitter or whatever social media website you use. You can actually post something onto your page if you want, saying that I support Brandon J. Nider for 4th District, or check this out, whatever you wanted to say. So it's all on that one page. You can get everything done.
Mm-hmm.
So we took Yes, we took care of all the effort required to actually do the work. We just did everything in one page so that you can get everything done.
Well, I remember when I was going to school, they were teaching us one way, and I would believe that you were taught pretty much the same sort of stuff. How did you learn to incorporate the new technology in a more proficient and more and less expensive way? You know, because things have gotten so expensive nowadays that we're always looking for a better way of reaching out, touching someone other than in a commercial.
So what the general idea is that there's always a cheaper method. And what this actually took was you just take a few individuals who have already been working on programming and coding,
mm-hmm.
who are personal friends or you just know them. And what you don't do is put an ad out and then choose the first highest bidder, because that's what it seems the city does. It's all about actually knowing the person or personalizing the experience. Mostly everybody who helped us put it to a website together was myself because of my computer history, my computer background, or a few other select individuals. So what we're doing now is that we're working with another company, and we have all our whole campaign website all done in one site.
Nice, very interesting, very very interesting. So were you involved first in technology, or were you first involved in politics, and then you married the two somewhere along the way, or they converged?
I've always been involved with computer technology and computer building and repair. Since a very young age. If anything, I married politics to it because I've been able to cut a lot of costs. I've managed most of my contacts much easier, and then it also gives me the ability to live stream and live stream other events, and group chats and everything else with the campaign team. So we managed to do everything all in one.
I wanted to ask you: Do you feel that by incorporating the new technology that it is a It brings everyone down to the same level playing field, or is the old politics still, or the arbiter of the old politics is still money? And is money eclipsing the message? Is there a way to overcome money, or will money buy an election every time?
Well, how you have to see it is you might have a dedicated candidate who's putting his heart into a position, say, city council president. But you'll have an individual who's willing to spend $200,000 on the campaign, and everybody knows his name just because it's everywhere. So, I mean, money always plays a factor because it's all about getting known. And if your name's everywhere, the person's just going to vote for you because they saw their name everywhere and they don't know anybody else. So, yes, money always plays a factor. It's a very sad part of politics. And it kills other people's campaigns. I'm pretty sure we heard that Bill Knuckle is pulling out through financial reasons. I was listening, and, you know, city council president in history has always been an expensive campaign. We're not talking, you know, $10,000-$15,000. We're talking maybe $90,000-$100,000 campaign. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people who want to just, I mean, if anything, that's a year's salary of the position that it pays itself. It's a crazy amount of money for a campaign. And then what you see is that only people who actually have more than an amount sitting around actually run for it, not anybody who validly cares about the position.
Right. Yeah, that seems to be the case. Is there a way though to balance with new technology? Is it possible to reach out enough people? Let's say a Skype call, you know, a communal Skype call. Is there a
The main way you could take advantage of technology, it would have to be a citywide race. And you'd have to engage the young community. That's the only way you'd be able to even the playing field. What you'd be looking at is you have to take advantage of the current age bracket under 35 and engage them in technology in an early campaign. And then you would have to engage them throughout the entire campaign, and you basically have to steal all the under 35 voters away from the other candidate, because anybody above that age generally won't be involved with the technology, and they'll just go looking at the billboards or the flyers up at their house or the meetings or et cetera. And then once again, you're probably fighting a party, and that's always hard to, you'll see more Democrats vote for Republicans than you ever see Republicans vote for Democrats, especially in the city of Yonkers. It's very hard, depending on what party you're on, it's just very hard to say, but the easiest way to even the playing field is technology with young people on a campaign.
Do you feel that those people who still have signed on maybe 30, 40 years ago, and they regard themselves as Republican or Democrat, are those true to their present leanings today, or are people mislabeling themselves? Because the vote doesn't always seem to go along with the demographics of how people define themselves. Do you find that to be a problem?
I do actually find it to be an issue, because we have registered Republicans who act more like Democrats than anything, but then we have Democrats who act like complete conservatives. What I find funny is anybody can register any party and have completely different views.
Yeah.
And that's because, honestly, there's no true factless behind every party about what they actually stand for. You just have a bunch of leaders who all have different views, and you kind of just get the idea. So it's very hard. In the city of Yonkers, as I said, everybody's screaming this 2-to-1 ratio of Democrats everywhere, but in actuality, yeah, you have a 2-to-1 ratio for Democrats to Republicans. But at the same time, these Democrats that you have a 2-to-1 ratio are still reaching over the aisle voting more for Republicans.
Well, do you find that we have a lot of progressives in the city, or are we very much conservative, whether we define ourselves as Republican or whether we define ourselves as Democrat? Is this a very conservative community?
The city of Yonkers and the 4th District is pretty conservative on their views. The Republicans within the city of Yonkers are what I would like to classify as regular Republicans, not progressive, but not conservative. But at the same time, when it comes to a city position, those views really don't show until they reach a higher position. So we can actually decide if they're conservative, progressive, or Republican, because in the city of Yonkers, a lot of party views don't apply, we talked about this on the other radio show, where if on the city of Yonkers level, a lot of party politics actually won't come into play. Now, they start coming into play as such county or state, and of course federal, but on a local level, they really don't start coming into effect.
So does that make it more difficult for any candidate to define their platform should they believe in certain standards? Is that what makes your new party a little bit more attractive, because you could be more more honest to the positions at hand, and you're not confined to any particular party politic? I guess
that's
your own party politic.
Pretty much. We'd be engaging our own standards, which is just honest and truth, then going by what the community wants, or the district wants at this point. But what the other thing is that we don't have to worry about making some party leaders mad, and then we have candidates who for some reason won't get a nomination, don't get party support anymore, just because they seem to put one against the party at one time.
Uh-huh. So does the potential of creating this new party, that will open up, I guess, a completely new standard, and you could very quickly expand beyond one district to the whole city. Is that part of the intention, to be able to bring forward that mission statement?
Yes.
And will it? I guess, and it will certainly initiate a tremendous amount of interest, positively, I would suspect, from the younger generation, and probably a tremendous amount of concern from the older generation, who wouldn't know what to do with it.
Exactly. I mean, one of the main things is shock factor.
Oh, I love shock factor. That's really good. But
what do you do when you have something that you can't control going out wild?
Absolutely. I guess that's what that scares me only in horror pictures. I can't handle that, or so I don't watch that stuff. But the politics, I enjoy the shock factor. You know, almost a gotcha moment. You know, that, no, you messed up. You didn't think it out right. So are you working with other people to help you formulate some of your concepts, or have you worked so hard for so long that this is almost second nature to you?
We've been in this campaign process so long now, which a lot of people don't really believe, that we've been working in this since, you know, the late winter of last year. That most of the ideas are solidified, where you could have me as a candidate, and next election cycle there could be another candidate that has different views against me, but he fits for that district.
Very fascinating, really, really, really fascinating. Well, it
so
seems
if anything,
like, yeah.
If anything, Hezzy, we're the true independent party.
Ooh. Well, you know, you just have to make sure that you don't step on their, on their name. Well, you know, one thing is for sure about the Independence Party, no matter whether one agrees with them or not, certainly the leader of the Independence Party is probably one of the most savvy and brilliant chess players in politics I've ever met. So, you know, that's a good person to emulate if you're looking for independence and proficiency in getting your message out there. So I wish you great luck. What are you hoping for then as you move ahead?
Well, first, what the main focus is right now is to get these signatures done. But afterwards, it's just we're hosting a few events throughout the city. Not just within our district, and then we're also attending. We have I'm attending every other city event, and a few community events that are happening even today.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just getting the word out there.
Nice. Well, before you go, if you don't mind, maybe you could repeat some information about how people can reach out to you, as in return for your reaching out to them. So what websites do they need to know about?
Well, the main hub for a campaign is brandonneider.com, BrandonNeider.com. That hub right there can actually connect you to our Facebook, Twitter. You can also volunteer through the website. We'll let us know that you want to volunteer, and we can follow up with a phone call. And you can get the latest updates on our campaign and what's going on, what events are even around the city, and what events that we're hosting. So if anything, it's also slightly a community hub as well.
I want to ask you before you go, when you talk about media, is radio important? Is internet important? Are newspapers important? Is TV important? What's relevant today?
What you want to reach out to is that you're going to have a select range of listeners across every spectrum. So you want to hit radio, you want to hit newspaper, you want to hit TV. You want to, especially the internet as well. You want to get all the viewers because you won't lose viewers by going to different sources. You can only gain.
I believe in that too. It's just that I'm usually amazed at how many people would rather spite their nose, to get something else going on. I have no idea. I'm appreciative that at least you're willing to reach out beyond just Yonkers. I mean, should you win the race to represent the 4th District, whoever wins is really big news. At least in my book, I think it's important for the New York Post and the New York Daily News and the New York Times and News One in New York all to know about it. This is important stuff.
It is.
Yeah. Well, I'm so excited about Yonkers. I'm glad that you're in the race. You know, maybe you'll bring in some new ideas and people will adopt you or they might adopt some other thing. But whatever it is, hopefully we're moving ahead in this game.
No problem.
Anyway,
thank you so much.
Lot of luck and thank you very much. I'm sorry about all the noise and the construction here. Maybe Yonkers City Hall is not the venue to be operating on. Anyway, so just take care. All the best. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you. Have a good day, Andy.
You too, sir. Be well. Bye.
You too. Bye.
Well, there we are with Brandon Nider. Very interesting. This is Westchester on the Level. My name is Hezzy Aris. You can reach us if you'd like at 347-205-9201. Again, 347-205-9201. Some interesting news came today from the Senate Democratic Conference leader, Andrea Stewart-Cousins. She has been able to get an extension of the hours at the first Department of Motor Vehicles. So to better accommodate customers, the senator who represents the 35th District is pleased to announce extended business hours on Monday through Thursday at the Yonkers branch of the Department of Motor Vehicles, and the extended hours are part of a statewide pilot program approved by the legislature this year, which seeks to make the Department of Motor Vehicles more accessible and user-friendly. So the year-long pilot will determine the hours that are most convenient for customers and the DMV. So results of the pilot will be evaluated to determine if the expanded hours should continue beyond the test period and if additional offices should offer extended hours of operation. So in case you didn't know, the Yonkers Department of Motor Vehicles office is located at 1 Larkin Plaza. It now offers services Monday to Thursday from 7:30 in the morning to 7:30 at night, on Fridays from 8:30 in the morning to 4 p.m. as previously scheduled. And so visiting the DMV under the previous schedule could be extremely inconvenient, as most people know. Those with stringent work schedules often found it difficult to take time off the job to come to the DMV for any number of services offered there. The pilot program will help the state determine which hours are best suited for the community so the DMV can provide the best of services. And this is a statement none other than by the Senate, the Democratic leader, and we're talking about none other than Senator Andrea Stewart-Cousins. So, well, thank you, Senator, for putting this in place. It certainly will make it a lot easier to know that the hours are extended. But can you imagine, from 7:30 in the morning, Monday to Thursday, till 7:30 at night. I think that's pretty good, don't you? So thank you, Senator. Well, that's some of the good stuff that came in. Let's see what else is happening. You know, in case you didn't know and you didn't have an opportunity to go there yet, the Yonkers Tribune, we put up our latest article about the Blue Truth. I reread it again. I thought I had corrected everything, but I see there's one mistake, which I'll have to correct by late this afternoon. At about 1 o'clock this afternoon, we're going to have a meeting of the Yonkers New Main Street Development Corporation. It somehow is between and betwixt a meeting of the Korean War veterans at which Yonkers Mayor Mike Spano will be attending. So he'll be there from 12 o'clock to about 1. I think he'll be attending the New Main Street Development Corp. I'm not sure. And then I understand that he'll be there again later on. So he may have to balance, juggle the event with more than one tactic, so to speak. He'll have to be, I think, at the end of two places at once. So we wish him well. We found out that Marty Rochelle is just like a standard bearer, let's say, for the city. He had fallen into a lot of pain and suffering, but he was able to do his show at WVOX, 1460 AM. And so he was able to conduct the show from there. And from 6 to 7 o'clock at night, you could always check out everything by going to WVOX.com and looking up his name, Marty or Martin. Rochelle, R-O-C-H-E-L-L-E. So, you know, that's really cool. Well, not sure how well we'll be able to do because in the, with regard to this area that, you know, from City Hall that we're broadcasting, it's a little bit hard at times to find out, you know, where we are in comparison to some of the news stories. I guess the first thing I should do is check some of the news. Let's see if we can get Loha.com and see what they're covering today. Loha is part of the Lower Hudson, I guess that's how they came up with the name. I may be on the wrong page here. Here it is. So, well, you know what? Before I continue on, let me just go to the top of the page of the Yonkers Tribune. Okay. Let's see. So, we wrote the story on... actually, what I could do is I can read this to you, and then we can go into the comments as well. So bear with me a moment. Okay, so I'm going to read this off the cell phone, but transmit off the iPod. So it's called Blue Truth, the empty words of rogue union leader Pete Olson. Written by me. So on July 5, 2013, beleaguered controversial Yonkers PBA president Keith Olson was flushed out, forced to make a statement in defense of himself, as well as his two close conspirators, those he refers to in his response as great friends, Captain John Mueller of the 4th Precinct and Detective Sergeant Brian Moran of the Detective Division. So before we dissect desperate plea for survival, most people will concur his statement was cold, calculating, replete with outlandish lies and denials. In fact, it seems as though at one point he was patting himself on the back for some questionable charity effort he and his friends conducted that were nothing more than self-serving in tone. So according to Mr. Olson's own statement, overshadowed with legal lingo, giving credence to the fact that he was PBA lawyers against his own members, attempting to silence their First Amendment rights by those individuals pointing out unethical, immoral, and possible gross violations of state and federal laws that will lay out the clear and present case against Keith Olsen and his enabling cronies. In fact, one could say these unscrupulous sources could be whistleblowers that had it Olsen's thug style union mannerisms. This article will present tangible proof of the truth and nothing but the truth, quote unquote. In fact, it was distinctly clear that Olsen never addressed any of the allegations in the Blue Truth articles, as he called them. To that end, we will eloquently rekindle his deteriorating memory of the indisputable facts. I have to correct that. So first and foremost, Keith Olsen was contacted and asked about the comments of the Blue Truth articles by the Yonkers Tribune. In fact, Olsen called everyone who would listen to help stop its publication. Mr. Olsen was quoted saying it is all lies. So let us talk about his alleged collusion with his co-conspirators and failure to prove his lack of involvement. We agree that Olsen and the executive board did not have the authority to hire anyone for the position of police commissioner, but Olsen did conspire with the Amicone regime to get rid of the well-liked and well-respected police commissioner Robert Taggart, who continued to fight crime with limited resources and scaled-down units needed for a large city. So the bottom line is that Olsen was looking to make John Mueller the next commissioner and wanted Sergeant Brian Moran promoted to the rank of detective sergeant at 2 months in uniform. So as the Blue Truth articles state, Keith Olsen was recognized to be conspiring with then-Mayor Mike Spano, John Fleming, and was eventually introduced to Hartnett, the designee who would eventually come to replace Commissioner Taggart. They were all seen together masquerading around the city's planning Taggart's demise. Meanwhile, there was Keith Olsen whispering to the former mayor how Taggart was not up to the task. How coincidentally, the day Taggart was asked to resign, the trio all crossed paths on the overpass to City Hall. Olsen, did you forget that day? As for your denial on your paving the way for Hartnett, that is clearly inaccurate. You orchestrated and supported which units were functional for their own benefit and not the best interest of for the members who were represented or responsible. You were responsible to represent. After Taggart left the job, Mueller and Moran came in like gangbusters, all right. In fact, a couple of special investigation detectives saw the trio at 1061 North Broadway with Fleming. Those detectives distinctly heard you repeatedly say on many occasions, quote, who needs a burglary unit? They arrest one person every 9 months, end quote. When the time is right, the Yonkers Tribune will share those detectives' names. Well, the rest of those legally penned article of your legally penned article is the faux dog and pony show that's nothing short of empty jargon to save face for the readers and concerned citizens. Olsen used his PBA title to justify and support his own legitimacy while Commissioner Hartnett went unchallenged. Olsen scurried about the city, telling the membership that they were lucky to have jobs. He also played the role of city comptroller, offering up changes to the city budget, and penned numerous letters to the Yonkers City Council, pointing out what cuts they could make to the Teamsters Union membership. Local 456, the Captain, Lieutenants, and Sergeants Association, CLSA, and the Yonkers Firefighter Local 628, including all concessions to the Police Benevolence Association's own contract, citing changes on a temporary basis, saying it was necessary to save jobs and urging people and members to give up uniform stipends. The truth is that Olsen had two aspects of responsibility, the ploy and subterfuge. One is a fork-tongued PBA president and the other conspirator to making John Mueller the next commissioner on the backs of the membership, which in turn would have given Olson the power he desperately needed. The ploy was moving ahead handsomely just until after the unit fell from the YPD budget. Well, give me a second while I take a sip. Mr. Olson, your attorney's response is lacking substance and sincerity. In fact, your lawyer's response indicts you for failure to act in a responsible manner and purposely not addressing any of the facts raised among those raised in total among the three articles. We will not waste any more of the reader's time on your whitewashed denial of the issues without facts to rebut the assertions expressed. We will attach some articles and other relevant information to point out your refusal to address the cold, hard facts that the media can get through FOIL, the Freedom of Information Law. Let us take a hard and close look at the points or allegations or what you call outright lies that your lawyer skillfully did not want you to address. Detective Keith Olson, you stand accused of the following in the Blue Truth articles. It is alleged that Olson's fundraising efforts need to be scrutinized as to how fundraiser money was handled and if they were dispersed in a timely manner. It is alleged that your two great friends targeted a former PBA vice president with disciplinary charges 6 weeks after he alone called for a no-confidence vote against former police commissioner Edmund Hartnett in an open union forum. Actually, that was a mistake. That was actually, what's his name? Wait a second, Montero. What's Montero's first name? Ray. Sorry, Ray Montero. Sorry, I lost it. So it's against former, I guess he was a vice president, Ray Montero, in an open union forum, and Montero evidently was again targeted while campaigning against Olson by the same two great friends. Yeah, I must have moved some of the information incorrectly somehow. So anyway, it is alleged, we'll fix that this afternoon when I get to the Home Office. It is alleged that you have pending internal affairs investigations for a variety of complaints, and you are afforded PBA counsel. It is alleged that you and your friends conducted unauthorized investigations against PBA members and CLSA members. There is an internal memo supporting such actions. It is alleged that you have sent threatening text messages to members of the CLSA and PBA, as well as threatening members from both unions with physical harm. It is alleged that your two great friends investigated over 100 firefighters over a two days long time frame after a former intelligence detective refused because the proper protocol was not followed. The investigation was eventually stopped by court order. It is alleged that you and your friends created a fake police officer identity and sent text messages to union adversaries seeking information through a fictitious character. It is alleged that internal affairs personnel files may have been compromised while under former police commissioner Hartnett for Olson's own personal use against the PBA membership. These are just a handful of the issues Olson has refused to comment upon. So, like a con artist, he denied everything. What else could he do? Bottom line, Keith Olson has failed to bring a contract forward going on the fifth year. It appears that the YPD is headed toward another contrived impasse with the city of Yonkers. He has managed to save Captain Mueller from being transferred while telling his own members there's nothing he can do for them. Also, before most of the doors closed on him, he has managed to get his sister a job at City Hall for about $64,420 annually and secured himself a city-owned police vehicle while earning a stipend of about $4,000 a month with free gas. These are just some of the undeniable Bluetooth issues plaguing Keith Olsen and his two great friends. Accordingly, Yonkers Tribune sources raised some very serious concerns for Mr. Olsen's legitimacy as a union leader. Those who wish to contest any facts herein are asked to do so by directing email to Bluetooth, and so on and so forth. There are links at the bottom to all the three articles written by Bluetooth, and also the article called Setting the Record Straight, The Real Bluetooth, written by none other than Detective Keith Olsen. So let's see, here go the comments. Somebody said at about 10 this morning, here we go again. And then someone said, why does he have a city-owned vehicle? I thought the mayor was taking that benefit away. And then another one says, this whole thing seems like nothing more than sour grapes to me. Well, I guess that's sour grapes. Oh. All right. Well, they're definitely reading on and on. It looks like we've got a little bit of time left, so we can see what we can do. I really can't stand reading off my cell phone. It really is a pain in the butt. Oh, let's just see what's happening here. Okay, we're going to try to go to Hans van Katz just to see what's happening. Oh, this is very, very interesting, actually. Out of Egypt, the Egyptian army chief has urged mass rallies against terror. Egypt's army chief, General Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, on Wednesday called for mass public rallies that would give him a mandate to fight terrorism and violence as ousted President Mohamed Morsi's supporters continued to protest against his removal. So Egypt's military chief on Wednesday called on his countrymen to hold mass rallies on Friday, calling for an end to violence and terrorism while voicing their support for the army. Well, very, very interesting. So General Abdel Fattah al-Sisi said a large turnout would give him a mandate, end quote, and an order, quote, end quote, to do what is necessary, quote, end quote, to combat the bloodshed that has killed dozens since the military removed Islamist President Mohamed Morsi 3 weeks ago. So next Friday, all honorable Egyptians must take to the street to give me a mandate and command to end terrorism and violence, he told a graduation ceremony for a class of military cadets broadcast on live TV. Very interesting, to say the least. Okay. All right, let's see what's happening in Copacabana Beach. Seems 500,000 Catholics have flocked to the Copacabana Beach. Hundreds of thousands of young Catholics have gathered Wednesday on Copacabana Beach as World Youth Day kicks off. Pope Francis will make a first appearance at the gathering on Thursday. The event begun on Tuesday with musicians and dancers entertaining the youth who braved the chilly drizzle. The beach, lined with a series of large monitors, was the site of an evening mass by local priests and Vatican officials. Later in the week, it will serve as an altar for two big appearances by Pope Francis. And by early this morning, already hundreds of thousands of people had packed the beach. Rain clouds cleared in time, and pilgrims from around the world waved flags, sang, and prayed as the Archbishop of Rio, Orani João Tempesta, led a mass to kick off the festivities in the country with the world's greatest number of Roman Catholics. However, the main attraction of the week-long event will be two appearances by the Pope himself, where he will lead a mass, a huge mass. Now, after a rapturous welcome marking the start of the first Latin American Pope's Brazil visit
He took the day to rest yesterday. The Pope did, however, communicate with his followers by Twitter. On Tuesday, he posted, "Dear young friends, Christ has confidence in you, and he entrusts his own mission to you. Go and make disciples." Wow, what a heady statement. Boy, this guy really knows how to connect, huh? Let's see what's happening over with regard to Edward Snowden as he stays in Moscow airport. So NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden remains in the transit area of the Moscow airport, and his future plans are uncertain. Lawyers said Wednesday, contradicting early reports that he had been given a document allowing him to enter Russia. U.S. Fugitive Intelligence Speaker Edward Snowden is still in the transit zone at a Moscow airport, and his future plans are uncertain. The lawyers said after meeting him on Wednesday, quote, "He's staying here. He's here in the transit zone at Sheremetyevo Airport." Pro Kremlin leader Anatoly Kucherena told reporters after meeting Snowden inside the area. His comments dashed expectations that Snowden, who last week applied for asylum in Russia, would leave the airport Wednesday after reports said he would leave a document allowing him free movement. So that goes on to tell us what's happening here. Anthony refusing to quit the New York City race after sexting scandal hit the news. So that's an intriguing thing. You must have heard about the Duke, the Duchess of Cambridge, showing off the baby son. That took place yesterday. And, all right. I think that's basically it. I see that it's about 11:30. I'm going to play for what's happening at the Westchester Broadway Theater from now all the way through August 11th. So listen in.
It's one of the most celebrated musicals of all time, with an unforgettable score by the world's most famous songwriting team. And it's on stage now at the Westchester Broadway Theater through August the 11th. Rodgers and Hammerstein's incomparable The Sound of Music. It's the classic story of Maria, the young governess who brings her love of music to the Von Trapp family amidst the intrigue of pre-war Europe. This uplifting story is the perfect musical for the entire family this summer, and its irresistible score includes some of Broadway's most memorable hits like My Favorite Things, Edelweiss, Do Re Mi, Climb Every Mountain, and many more. And remember, before the show, you and your family will enjoy a delicious served dinner with a choice of six entrees with special prizes for the kids. Order tickets online at BroadwayTheater.com or call 914-592-2222. That's 914-592-2222. Now's the time to rediscover Broadway right in your own backyard. This summer, bring the entire family to experience one of the world's best-loved musicals, Rodgers and Hammerstein's The Sound of Music, now through August the 11th, only at the Westchester Broadway Theater.
Well, we are back. This is Westchester on the Level. My name is Hezzy Harris. There has been some intriguing news that's come out with respect to Israel. And just bear with me here while we load up all the information so we could share them all with you. Okay. All right, let's just see if we can find it all here. I know that there is now an issue with regard to the American government, who will no longer validate those people who lived, who were born in Jerusalem. They will no longer be regarded as having been born in the state of Israel. So that should be very, very interesting to see how that happens. And in the meantime, let me see what else is going on here. Interestingly enough, Israel has a Israel's pushing ahead with the promotion of a railroad system. So let's just see in a moment if we can get to it. Here it is. Israel's pushing ahead with a grandiose West Bank railway plan, ignoring political borders. The plan, which includes 473 kilometers of rail with 30 stations on 11 lines and dozens of bridges and tunnels, is meant to connect all West Bank cities with one another. Palestinian Authority refused to cooperate with the plan. So it seems that the civil administration of Israel decided Wednesday to go ahead with its grandiose railway plan for the West Bank and open it up for public criticism after the Palestinian Authority refused Israel's request to participate in the planning. So the program is being aggressively promoted by Transportation Minister Yisrael Katz, Likud. Some 1 million new Israeli shekels has already been invested in the planning process. The plan, first made revealed by Haaretz, included 473 kilometers of rail. That's about 300 miles of railroad, with 30 stations on 11 lines, meant to connect all cities and regions within the West Bank and the West Bank with Jordan and Syria. Due to the West Bank's hilly terrain, the plans include dozens of bridges and tunnels. So the railway plan, which is supposed to accommodate all populations living in the West Bank, completely ignores all current political borders. Initial discussions were held about 18 months ago. Even if the hundreds of billions of shekels needed to realize the plan are never found, the mere existence of the plan means that any construction program from now on will have to take the theoretical railway lines into account. So today the civil administration discussed the details of the plan presented by Alex Schmidt, who was hired by Israel Railways to planning the lines. Quote, there are 11 tracks. The central line runs parallel to the route connecting Jenin, Nablus, Jerusalem's outskirts, Hebron, and Beersheba. Another line runs along the Jordan Valley and connects to Jordan and Syria. There will be also latitudinal lines connecting the two main lines, a line between Nablus and the Adam Bridge, Tul Karm and Nablus, and Nablus and Hosh Ha'ayim. The a line connecting the Allenby Bridge to Jerusalem and Ramallah, a line from Ramallah to Lud and Tel Aviv, a line connecting Kiryat Gat to Hebron, and a line connecting Kiryat Gan to Hebron, and another line in Gaza that will make it possible to connect Ramallah with the Gaza Strip using Israeli trains. So in terms of the demand for railway services, Schmidt said, we use the data provided by the Palestinian Bureau of Statistics. The number of residents who work in the industrial area, we checked how many people use vehicles compared to how many use public transportation. We also calculated population growth. Hi, how you doing? And we expect 12,000 people to use the mountain area, the Mount Ridge line between Jerusalem and Ramallah during the morning rush hour, and 3,000 between Hebron and Beersheba at the same time. We estimate 2035 we'll see 30 million train rides. Holy moly, what an unbelievable project. Boy, that needs to really be heard. It sounds very, very interesting. Okay, let's just see. Election begins for Israel's next chief rabbi. And this is going to be very interesting. China evidently tried to cover up counterterrorism meetings with Israeli officials. So minutes from a 2010 meeting show that China intended to conceal meetings with Israelis regarding Islamic Jihad money laundering, and Israel still deliberating whether to allow officials to testify in U.S. victims' family lawsuit against the Bank of China. Heavy duty stuff. Again, this is from Haaretz. The Chinese government tried to cover up counterterrorism meetings it held with Israeli officials in the wake of allegations that Islamic Jihad funds were laundered by the Bank of China. It emerged last week. So leaked documents shed new light on the lawsuit filed by the family of David Waltz, an American Jewish teenager who was killed in a terrorist attack in Tel Aviv in 2006 against the Bank of China for damages in a U.S. court. They claimed that the money transferred in one of the bank's branches via accounts held by Palestinians from the Gaza Strip were used to finance Hamas and Islamic Jihad terrorist cells in the territory. So one of those groups dispatched the suicide bomber that carried out the attack at a shawarma restaurant in South Tel Aviv in which Wolf was killed. The family has already won $320 million in damages in a similar federal lawsuit against the Iranian and Syrian governments for their support of Palestinian military groups. In that case, an affidavit from an Israeli official said Islamic Jihad and Hamas in the Gaza Strip received extensive economic aid via labyrinthine routes in which the Bank of China played a central role. Heavy duty stuff. I mean, this stuff is almost as entertaining and as interesting and as intriguing, of course, as what's going on here in Yonkers. So continuing on, it says that Israel, which approached the Wolf's family and suggested filing the suits, also promised to support them with evidence and affidavits from former senior defense establishment officials, and these include former intelligence official Uzi Shaya, who was supposed to testify that the Chinese were warned a year before the attack about the use of those bank accounts. At the same time, however, the Chinese government put serious pressure on Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu not to cooperate with the proceedings. About 2 weeks ago, Israeli daily newspaper Yediot Ahronot reported that again the backdrop of Netanyahu's visit to China about 2 months ago, Israel backpedaled on providing witnesses for the case in New York. My God, there's always somebody bending over. Isn't that unbelievable? So the discussion last month in the U.S. District Court in New York focused on the plaintiff's request for discovery, pretrial disclosure of pertinent facts or documents by one or both parties, and for a litigation hold which asks parties to preserve their data in light of the pressure from the Chinese government. The Wolf's family's representative presented to the court minutes from a 2010 discussion between the Bank of China and Chinese government officials in which the latter admitted that there had in fact been meetings between Chinese and Israeli anti-terrorism officials in 2005 and 2007. The minutes of the meeting revealed the Chinese intended to deny meetings with the Israelis took place. Wow, heavy duty stuff. You just can't make this stuff up. So we, the Chinese Foreign Ministry, recommend that these authorities issue a written statement of no meeting took place to the Bank of China, it said in the minutes. And the minutes also noted that the Chinese assumed the Israelis would also deny the meetings took place. Unbelievable. So it goes on and on and on and on. So you have it. See all this stuff that goes on all over the world? It's just amazing. Let's see what else is happening. All right. This is a big issue. I don't know if we have enough time, but I'm going to try to do it. Yeah, this is really a frightening situation, which is normally not discussed. The question being asked is, when a beloved rabbi is also a child abuser, what does one do? So denial is often the Jewish Orthodox community's first impulse when we hear about abuse committed by rabbis, the way abuse cover-ups happen, and how we can work to prevent them. In the future, this is an article by Stacy Klein in Haaretz. And a few years ago, she writes, I worked with an adolescent boy who had been sexually abused as a child. Part of his therapy and to help him work through the immense shame, self-blame, rage, and confusion he felt. We wrote down together his story, what had happened. As we were finishing, I asked, do you have any questions for me about what happened to you? He said, yes. Why did this happen to me? I was at a loss for words. as a psychotherapist works with traumatized children. I feel profoundly powerless and sad every time I sit with a child who has faced the story of his or her betrayal. How do you explain to a child the depth of the pathology of the perpetrators who shattered his childhood, or help him believe that not all adults in his life will fail him and that intimacy with the right people is worthwhile? Yet I know that in some ways this was a lucky child, one whose parents heard him and gave him help. Many were not so lucky. At Yeshiva University, the adults who failed the children in their care were teachers, rabbis. A lawsuit and complaint filed last week by victims of abuse at Yeshiva University's Manhattan High School boys alleged that trusted Yeshiva University leaders covered up and thus enabled horrific abuse for decades, despite repeated requests for help and protection by victims and their families. Growing up in the Orthodox Jewish community, having attended Yeshiva University, embracing its values and practicing as a psychotherapist in the Orthodox community, I've struggled to grasp why cover-ups happen and particularly how people can stand by and allow abuse to flourish. I believe the answer lies in understanding how people cope in the face of shocking, traumatic information. When we hear that a child has been abused, especially when the accused is a respected rabbi, our first impulse is often denial. This defense mechanism, identified by Anna Freud, protects us from feeling powerlessness and distress in the face of overwhelmingly painful information. Even parents of victims may initially have this urge to deny a child's abuse to avoid devastation and self-blame. So consider this. How might it feel for you to learn that a close friend was accused of sex crimes against a child? You would be shocked and might have an inclination to defend him or her, at least initially. But then what? Would you ignore the information about his harm to children? If so, what might motivate you to do so? What would it take for you to open your heart and imagine an adolescent boy being brutalized by a trusted adult? Would it have to happen to your child in order for you to connect with the abject terror of this act to a child? Rabbis and administrators at Yeshiva University may have felt an impulse to deny allegations against abusers who were also their colleagues, but as spiritual leaders and educators, they had a moral obligation to investigate reports which victims alleged they repeatedly ignored. Their persistent denial turned innocent boys with great potential into deeply wounded men. This resulted in some leaving their faith, others attempting suicide, and or requiring lifelong psychiatric care. This obligation to acknowledge abuse includes current Yeshiva University leaders who were approached by victims in recent years, and not only did not act until their hand was forced by the Forward's breaking story, the Forward's newspaper, but repeatedly ignored victims' requests for a response. Denial is a normal process that evolves through childhood as we mature and learn to make sense of reality. But when a child's well-being is at stake and adults deny and obstruct truth, the impact on children is devastating. We put the rabbi and the institution before the child. We put our own discomfort or agendas ahead of the destruction of a child's whole world. We use arguments such as, you have to understand, they didn't know much in those days, or, well, it was only wrestling, or it was in the past. Why should that be the current Yeshiva University administration's issue now? Our minds create one excuse after another, or blame the victim in an effort to preserve the goodness in a respected person or institution, or, as we have been seeing lately with members of the Orthodox rabbinate, to preserve their established network of friends. What motivates the denial? Some leaders have a dangerous inability to differentiate between compassion for a perpetrator's struggles and excusing their criminal behavior. Others deny allegations because they deny their own abuse histories or fear that their own indiscretion, sexual or otherwise, could be revealed. For instance, there have been suggestions that several rabbis who still defend the convicted Orthodox child abuser and rabbi were themselves abused by him. Many are protecting their friends in their networks or an institution. Regardless of the reason, all of these motivations reflect profoundly disturbing gaps in empathy and leadership. When the story of alleged abuse at Yeshiva University broke, the Chancellor, Dr. Norman Lam, excused his failures to report our allegations by saying, quote, "It was not our intention or position to destroy a person without further inquiry. Not destroying a rabbi's reputation trumped saving hundreds of children from harm. In Judeo-Christian communities, an important factor to consider is the desperation many of us feel to be good and do the right thing in God's eyes and in the eyes of others. This urgency can lead to a phobia of anything deemed bad, leading us to exclude anything that threatens the image we wish to hold for ourselves or our people. Our compassion for our children gets lost if we act from the fear about how things might look and the desire to preserve reputations. Ironically, by denying our darker sides, we actually become our fears and avoid facing all of who we are, imperfect beings, trying to live with an image of parameters such as I am only a good person, or rabbis are above reproach, forces that Carl Jung called the shadow and what the Kabbalah calls Sikha Acha, the other side, to always backfire on us. How can we heal our community? By heightening awareness of how denial works and learning to slow down and listen with the most open of hearts when there are allegations. This means we commit to allowing all that we experience within ourselves and towards others when we hear shocking news, possibly noting an initial impulse to deny, even intense discomfort and confusion, but always prioritizing our responsibility to the innocent children entrusted to our care. We can also heal by accepting that everyone, ourselves included, fall into the gray zone of having both good and bad traits. This can be particularly challenging in religious communities if members believe that God only sees in black and white. Someone can be a beloved rabbi and a child molester. Someone can be a respected leader who errs in his choices and requires pressure from his community to do the right thing. We have a certain time grasping and because it leaves us unable to resolve our wish to put people neatly into categories of good or bad. We have to instead hold the space for our discomfort while maintaining the need for accountability for those who have or who may have committed crimes. So lastly, for the sake of our beloved children, we must demand more of our future leaders that they have the capacity for self-reflection, humility and compassion first and foremost for the terror of the sexually abused child. So it seems that Stacy Klein, LCSW, psychotherapist of private practice in Manhattan, specializing in the treatment of anxiety, OCD is obsessive compulsive disorder and child trauma, and she blogs at Is There Life After Therapy, and you can follow her on Twitter at Stacy, that's spelled S-T-A-C-E-Y, Klein, K-L-E-I-N, L-C-S-W. So it's at Stacy Klein, L-C-S-W, for following her on Twitter. Wow. Amazing, isn't that? Well. All right, whatever it is. Oh, this is very interesting from a business perspective in Israel. The Israel Discount Bank Development is an advanced self-controlling stake in Klal Insurance. The buyer is reportedly the Chinese firm Hanlung Group. A Tel Aviv court last month set a late August deadline for IDB to sell its stake in Klal. So a Chinese investor, reported to be the Hanlung Group, is in advanced talks to buy a 30% stake in Klal Insurance Enterprise Holdings, majority holder of the IDB Development Corporation, announced on Wednesday. So the potential sale was being valued at new Israeli shekels of 1.38 billion, according to the Israel Development Bank Development, which would value Klal at about 4.6 billion new Israeli shekels, which is a 24% price premium over its share price at the opening of trading Wednesday morning. So that's really quite interesting. We'll see where that goes. We'll report on that into the future. We're just about at the finishing moments of the hour. Let's find out what's happening in the Sizzling Saturdays, if you don't mind my reminding you, so listen in. Then we'll be back.
The summer excitement is back at the Westchester Broadway Theater with our sizzling Saturday Night Special Series all through August, beginning on Saturday, August 10th, with the incredible Frankie Valli tribute, Let's Hang On.
Let's hang on.
All the greatest hits of the four seasons like Sherry, Walk Like a Man, Big Girls Don't Cry, and so many more. Then on Saturday, August 17th, international singing and recording star Michael Amante returns with his amazing repertoire of romantic, classical, and Broadway hits. Then there's another great oldies and doo-wop night on the 24th with a double bill performance by the Teenagers and the Capris. And we'll finish the series with an hilarious adults-only Battle of the Sexes comedy night on Saturday, August 31st. And don't forget, before each of these great shows, you'll enjoy a delicious served dinner with a choice of six entrees. Order tickets online at BroadwayTheater.com or call 914-592-2222. That's 914-592-2222. Come enjoy the summer weekends you've been waiting for with our Saturday Night Special Series all through August and only at the Westchester Broadway Theater.
Well, we are back, and I don't remember, I don't have enough screens before me to check out who's our guest for tomorrow. Well, we'll just have to wait till tomorrow. I'll write that up all on the Yonkers Tribune website tonight, and we'll see where we go from there. You know what I can do, actually? I can go over to... I can go over to another screen just to see what's happening with the Bluetooth article, and we'll see what's happening there, and so we can give you a report just as we're about to sign off. There, just last time there were three comments, there are now five. Bear with me a moment so we can read them, see what's going on here. So after the last one said, this whole thing seems like nothing more than sour grapes to me, someone else says, there's an old saying, sour grapes, when you F with the bull, you get the horns. Okay. And then someone writes, Captain Mueller and Lieutenant Chiarella, two of the biggest dirtbags on the job. They attack but don't like when people fight back. Beyond that job, they are nothing. Chiarella lied like a... like a rug, and is a scumbag nonetheless. But I have to say, Louis outdoes them all. He's a low-life, drunk scum of the earth who has no morals, will stab in the back and get whatever he wants like the other two. Detective Sergeant, he should not even be a cop. And of course, some of the cops and detectives will defend them because the three of them lack any supervisory skills and let the troops run ragged doing whatever they want with no supervision, so of course they will defend them. Well, this is all similar to what we were just talking about when it comes to ethics and standards, and it becomes a problem. So the latest Bluetooth article on the YonkersTribune.com website. I hope you enjoy it, appreciate it, and all comments are welcome. And thank you for your time. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Be well and stay safe. I've got to get to there we are. So we're going to sign off. Thank you. Bye.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.